Hello, and welcome to the Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast. I'm Sarah Polinchek. Today's topic, why parenting education? Why should parents consult professionals? Why are we here?
It's an existential question.
Yeah.
My name is John Summers Flanagan, and I want to welcome everybody to the show. I also want to say thanks to the Charles Engelhard Foundation and to NPEN, both of whom are sponsoring our Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
The real title of the show is How to Listen So Parents Will Talk and Talk So Parents Will Listen. And you can hear in that title that the focus is partly, or maybe a lot, on parenting educators and how parenting educators can work effectively with parents.
It is on focusing on parent educators, but I think parents would get a lot out of this too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I agree. That's why we're doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It reminds me of a story, you know, when you say, why parenting education and why parents should consult professionals. It makes me think of this story from quite a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's another personal parenting story, but it's a really fun one. No, it was terrible. So my youngest daughter was about, she might have been about three.
Mm-hmm.
And I put her in the bath and she's playing with her, you know, boats and ducks and whatever else is in there. And I'm checking her a little bit, you know. I might have been partially distracted, but I'm going in and out, and I go back in, and I look, and right next to the boat, there is this big
poop.
It's a big poop. There's a big thing of poop, and I am out of my mind, like, oh, no, no. And so I just start yelling, and I say, get out of the tub, get out of the tub.
It's a crisis.
It's a crisis. Oh, get out of the tub. I'm thinking that I'm just trying to figure out, how can I get that piece of poop out of there? And the whole thing is just a train wreck, and I'm yelling, and anyway, I'm trying to sterilize the bathtub, and then I get her back in, and I'm trying to wash her, and it's like completely freaking out. And so then I talk to my wife, and she says, oh, yeah, those kinds of things happen. That's just, you know, it's a nice warm bath, and kids poop in the tub. And then I was talking to my mom, like, later, and I said, I told her what happened. She goes, oh, well, yeah, of course kids do that. And I'm like, well, why didn't anybody tell me?
It's not in the manual that you were given.
I had no manual.
When you became a father.
Right. It was not in the manual, and it was shocking.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking that I had seen the movie Caddyshack, and that it was a lot like that scene where there's that Baby Ruth bar floating in the pool.
Jeez.
And the shark music. Ding, 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 ding. Right. And then anyway, it was frightening. And so what I'm saying is, it's not natural. We need education.
Yeah, because there isn't a manual. This
right.
is one of the most important things that anyone will ever do in their life, is raise another human being.
Yeah.
And so parents do need knowledge and wisdom. They do need to know that it is not a crisis when there's poop in the tub. But why don't we just get it from our own parents? I mean, what's the deal there?
I think that our parents are a great source, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, sometimes.
Sometimes.
They are.
Mm-hmm.
They're a great source for some things and not for other things. And I just think that for the most part, what we should want as parents is to keep getting a little better. And that's a little better than our parents or our caregivers were.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's a little better than we might have been if we had remained less knowledgeable.
Mm-hmm.
I also sometimes used to say, well, one of the reasons we have parenting classes is so that parents can get together and really plot to respond to their kids in the best ways possible.
Right. Well, plot, and also just to hear that, oh my gosh, my experience is not so unusual.
Right.
Other people have poop in their bathtubs too.
Yeah.
It's not just me. And to get that kind of support from other parents, and it's just so much more than strategizing and plotting and planning.
Right, right. And parenting in isolation
just
tends to be really hard, especially on mothers, I think. And we talked about postpartum depression in a
mm-hmm.
previous episode, but
yeah.
it can be super hard on mothers and hard on fathers to try to parent in isolation without outside support, without going and talking with other parents about their experiences, because we can just start to feel like we're
yeah.
doing everything wrong, or we might wrongly think we're doing everything right.
Yeah.
yeah.
So you and I agree wholeheartedly
yeah.
that parents all need support. Parenting is not instinctive.
Nope.
No. We know that. Parents mm-hmm. all need support. We agree on that completely. That's why we have this podcast.
Right.
But why do you and I go around and offer workshops and trainings to professionals on how they should work with parents?
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that happened for me early on, I was working at Families First as the director, and I was doing parenting classes, and I noticed that after the class was over, and it would be a fine class, people would be participating, and it was good, mm-hmm. but I'd get a line of five or six parents who wanted to ask me their specific questions. And so then I started thinking, oh, we should offer parenting consultations, one-on-one, where it's more private. People can feel more open that way. Mm-hmm. And we can call them consultations, not counseling, mm-hmm. not therapy.
People don't like that word sometimes.
Yeah, not training, right? Mm-hmm. It's just a consultation where we sit together and we talk. Another thing that I remember from back in those early days of working with parents is that parents really intimidated me. I was pretty scared of them.
What was so scary?
You know, I was scared that I wouldn't know enough. Mm-hmm. I was scared that they would be defensive or hostile toward me. Mm-hmm. And so I saw parents both as knowledgeable, but sometimes not knowledgeable, but I also saw them as maybe easily triggered, and maybe they would get quickly mad at me if I was critical mm-hmm. of them. And I steered away from being critical, of course, because I think that would be a bad way for a parenting educator to be, but I was still nervous.
I remember I have those nervous feelings too, those nervous memories from when I first started doing this work. I think parents are a really unique and vulnerable population.
Yeah.
We wear our children, so to speak, on our sleeve, you know? So in other words, I think a lot of people feel like the way that their kids behave is a direct reflection of them mm-hmm. and are so vulnerable to that judgment and critique of how they're doing. It's really tough.
Right. It's easy, I think, natural I think, for parents to feel insecure, and it's natural for parenting educators to feel insecure.
Yeah. I'm having a memory of one of the first parenting classes that I taught. You know, I did know my content.
Yeah.
I knew some of the really good tips that I could offer them.
Yeah.
And so being that it was my first, I went in sounding so smart. I had rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed, and I had practiced all my phrases, all my tips, and I just spewed them out.
Mm.
And what I got in return, you can probably imagine, was a bunch of deer in the headlight looks.
Yeah.
And it really was awful. I did not connect with my audience.
Right.
You know, parents really aren't seeking just knowledge and tips. It's so much more than that. And I left that class and cried.
Oh.
I know. Oh. It was sad.
I'm very sorry. You know, one of the things I discovered is similar to that is that parents are kind of ambivalent about seeking help. They mm-hmm. want help,
mm-hmm.
but they don't want to need help,
mm-hmm.
right? They don't want to be pathologized or to think that they're doing something terrible, but they wouldn't mind a little help here and a little help there. Mm-hmm. And so there's a navigational thing. And I think what you're saying from that first experience is, boy, you better connect first, or the educational information will just give you that deer in the headlights response.
For sure. And again, I don't think that we can overstate how the cultural expectation that parents just wake up, they give birth or they adopt, they have a baby or
right.
a family, however that works out, and you just know what to do. It's just, we just do what our parents did, and that's our default, and we just go day to day.
I remember hearing one older parent say to a younger parent who was, I think she was actually pregnant, and the older person said, "Oh, you know, once you hold that baby in your arms, you'll know what to do."
Oh, that's ridiculous.
And I thought to myself, no, you won't.
No, you won't. So if I could do anything to support mm-hmm. parents, it would be to have every single parent know that when their baby comes home, that they all need help and support from each other, and that we would have the kind of community where our instinct is not to know how to parent, but to know how to support each other.
Nice.
Yeah.
A different instinct, an mm-hmm. instinct that recognizes you don't have to be a perfect expert about how to parent
right.
from the beginning. It's a process. You learn and you need support from other people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't it interesting how we're really open to learning and education on so many topics?
It is.
So many things. I mean, how to use our computers, I mean, how to drive, how to do all this stuff. But it comes to relationships and relating to people and relating to our kids and doing all that. Just do it.
I remember I used to do television appearances to promote the parenting education stuff at Families First. And I was doing one with one of the famous local news people, mm-hmm. and she had her morning show, and I'm telling her about the parenting stuff, and she finishes up, and she looks at the camera, and she goes, "Well, that's great if you need that sort of thing."
She clearly didn't.
She clearly
no.
didn't.
Yeah.
So beyond any kind of special ways of connecting, mm-hmm. what do you think that parenting educators or professional parenting consultants need to know?
I think they need to know how to listen so that parents will talk and talk so parents will listen. And I say that in that really fun way because really, truly, I am saying this is a book that is excellent for anyone who works with parents. And it was written by you and Rita.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thank you. It's very nice of you to mention mm-hmm. that. And of course, we're doing a whole show kind of on it, and mm-hmm. we'll mention it later as a resource. But it's really about how important it is for parents to listen first and connect first. Otherwise, don't even bother giving educational information because mm-hmm. it's going to fall flat, just like you experienced.
Oh, completely. You know, and I think one of the things is that we as parents, I think most people might agree with me, that we all truly believe that our child is the most unique, special child, mm-hmm. right? So someone at a class or a book, it might be helpful, but it's not going to speak to the unique nature of my kid.
Right.
And that's where I think a special consultation with a professional can be really helpful.
Right, yeah. Well, and it's like, yeah, you don't want just a recipe, oh, do this, do mm-hmm. that. You need to be able to figure out the nuances
right.
to apply to your special son or daughter.
Yeah, and as parent yeah. educators, we should really be picking up and listening to those nuances. That's one
yep.
tip I'm going to sneak in there.
Yeah. I'm reminded of another old memory. This one is of a newspaper article. You probably remember Dear Abby.
I do.
Well, you know, we're a little older. Maybe people won't remember Dear Abby, but there are lots of different sources online mm-hmm. where people can get information about parenting and they can write in with their questions. Mm-hmm. We occasionally have parents write in to us.
Mm-hmm.
Advice is offered from people who have never, of course, met the family mm-hmm. or the parent. This one terrible story I remember about Dear Abby, where there was a mom of I think it was a 7-month-old, and she was writing in saying, I just have to confess, I love my daughter. I'm a full-time educator, but I just took the whole year off so that I could be with her. She's 7 months, but boy, by the end of the day, I am ready to hand her to my husband, and I enjoy the play, but, you know, I just am ready for a break. I really just want to go online and mm-hmm. and take a break and as soon as my husband gets home. And she ends her letter saying, is there anything wrong with me?
Mm-hmm.
And Dear Abby says, yes, there probably is something wrong with you. And that you need
Abby.
To go to a physician to be evaluated for depression. And I'm thinking when I read that, Abby must never have spent the whole day with a 7-month-old.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's pretty natural to need a break. And the expectations, again, I guess we're talking about cultural expectations
yeah.
on parents, are that somehow she should be home all day and then just, you know, want to cook dinner, want to keep spending time
yeah.
with the kid, never have any interests or needs of her own.
Hmm. I can just go back to a day like that myself, and it's so hard.
Yeah.
And in isolation. Nobody is meant to spend all day in isolation, let alone taking care of another human being. It's just not okay. And what I'm hearing there is so much judgment,
mm-hmm.
you know, that if you have a baby, you should just be loving life every single day.
Yeah.
No, we have to just acknowledge that it's a tough, tough endeavor, and supporting each other is what we need.
And one of the reasons that we even share stories like this is to give the message to parenting educators how sensitive parents are to judgment,
mm-hmm.
because it comes at them
yeah.
from so many different sources.
So many sources.
Could
mm-hmm.
be their in-laws,
mm-hmm.
could be Dear Abby, could be they're at the park and somebody, you know, their kid misbehaves
yeah.
and somebody comments and...
Oh, ooh. I didn't give my Johnny bananas
yeah.
until he was 4.
Right. Are you using that baby Einstein?
Oh,
I heard that's how you can really
boy.
Make your kid smarter.
I know.
And so just to summarize a couple of things we've already said, that you got no business offering information or education to parents until you've listened respectfully and with empathy, until you've gently and supportively explored what they've already tried.
Mm-hmm.
But another third piece that I think a lot of times parent educators undervalue and that parents need and should tell professionals, and that is the parent's best explanation for why the problem or the problem behavior is happening. Because parents will have a hypothesis or an idea mm-hmm. in their head to explain why or what the problem is caused by.
Mm-hmm.
And if parenting educators don't ask about that, it just sort of is in the parent's head. And you really need to access that.
Yeah. parents often have their own answers. They just haven't had time to even sit and process it out loud. And I think that's right. A big piece that parent educators can do is just allow them to really process what they're already thinking.
Yep, that can help. And sometimes they have some really crazy or unhealthy ideas about what might be causing the problem behavior.
We've encountered that to some degree.
From time to time.
I have a story.
Okay.
I worked with a couple, and this couple stands out to me because I'm really impressed by them, but they stand out in a lot of different ways. Let's just suffice it to say that our values are probably a lot different. My values and this couple's values. They had extreme beliefs that were very different than mine.
Okay.
Okay. We'll just say that. Okay. And spanking.
Yeah.
Spanking is one of those that was a regular part of their daily discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And when this couple came in, they were mandated by the judge to come in and see me. And the father walked in, and before he even sat down, he looked at me straight in the eye and he said, "I know the law, and you cannot tell me not to spank. So we're going to spank. And you can't tell me otherwise." I was a little nervous, but luckily I was a little more experienced than I was years ago. And I looked him back in the eye and said, "I hear you. I am not going to tell you how to parent." Okay. So it was hard because I really wanted to.
Yeah.
So we got talking, and one of the reasons they'd been referred was because their kids were hitting other people at school. And of course, my mind, I'm kind of a wise person sometimes. And I'm thinking, well,
or at least you think so.
They're learning how to solve problems by hitting because that's what's being modeled at home. To me, it's just clear.
Yeah.
Very obvious. But what do you think would have happened if I had just told them that? Oh, guess what? I know how to solve your problem. You just quit hitting your kids and they'll quit hitting other people.
Right.
That wouldn't have worked, right?
No.
So it was probably two or three sessions later and just processing and doing a lot of talking and actually me not doing so much talking but really listening to them and hearing what they had to say. And they started to make that connection all on their own because, as we just said, a lot of times parents already have these answers in their mind. They just don't know them. They just don't realize it yet. So they came in, I believe, for their fourth session and walked in, and that dad looked me square in the eye again and said, "We have become a non-hitting family."
Wow.
I know. And I said, you know, in my mind, I was like, yay, this is what I was hoping for. But to them, I just said, "Tell me about that. What went on for you?" And they were able to relay this connection that they had discovered on their own, that perhaps they were modeling behavior that was getting their kids trouble in school.
That is fantastic. And I really like the fact that you didn't then in some ways like, "Oh, of course, you know, the research
says." I knew
says.
That all along.
Yeah. Instead, you had them explain how they came to that conclusion, which was way more important for them to share with you. That's really cool.
Yeah. So really, I would have ruined everything if I had given them that answer up front right at the beginning. And I really believe that we never would have had the positive outcome that we did.
Yeah. You know, my philosophy has been that regardless of what the parenting educator's values are around spanking, right? Regardless of our decisions of how we want to parent or whether we want to spank or not spank, I think it's so important not to judge parents for spanking. And instead, what I have found, if you don't judge them at the beginning, a lot of times like you did, that they will start to look at their own behavior and they will, you know, I just have never met any parent who ever came into me and said, "I'd like to spank more." I mean, parents want other alternatives. They want to figure out other ways to be a positive influence in their children's lives.
I have found that in my work too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are your favorite skills that you think parenting educators should teach parents?
I have a couple things.
Okay.
One is I want parent educators to talk with parents in a way that will ask them the question, why focus on some of the negative things and make our kids feel bad in order to get better behavior?
Okay.
You know, so my cheesy statement for that is let's water the flowers and not the weeds.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. I remember you saying that before.
Yeah, because if we're pouring a lot of attention on the behaviors that we don't want necessarily, we're just going to get more of that kind of behavior.
Yeah.
And it's just something I think we don't think about a lot.
Yeah. I've heard this said as the statement, catch them being good, right? So pay attention when they're being good as opposed to paying too much attention when they are misbehaving.
Yeah. And we've said this in prior podcasts, but the Gottmans, John and Julie Gottman, have done a lot of research on this and have found that it's really a 5-to-1 ratio, mm-hmm. where we want to be saying or having 5 positive interactions with our kids for every 1 negative interaction. And the reason why is because they've found in the research that a negative interaction has more power and more weight to it. And so it takes 5 positives to kind of weigh that out. And magically, you do elicit better behavior from kids when they're getting that kind of a ratio. Now, I always teach this to parents, and I say, don't walk around with a calculator in.
Right.
But it's just that general sense that there's more positivity in your home than negativity.
Yeah. One of the things that famous behaviorists always say is that if you want to use timeout, you want to use timeout from reinforcement. And this is one of the things that I would tell parents and parenting educators in terms of how to teach parents things is that a lot of times parents have learned things that are not exactly right, you know. And one of the things that Alan Kasdan, fantastic behaviorist, has said is that in order for time out to work, it's called time out from reinforcement. And he says if it's going to work, it only works if time in is really good.
Yeah.
Right? In other words, you're having a really good time with your family, with your kids. And then you can use time out because they really are missing out on the fun time. And it needs to be pretty short.
Yep, I like that. I have another message I would like to give to all parent educators.
I'm listening.
Which is just that if we truly can be supportive and kind and understanding and compassionate to a parent, which I just, again, would like all of us to be that way, but especially a parent educator, it is likely that that parent can go home in some small way and be kind and compassionate to their kids.
Yeah, I would like to think that that's true.
I know. I believe that. And I have another quick story. And I'm tooting my own horn a little bit here because I think I responded.
Toot away.
Yeah.
You actually told a story that didn't go well. And
I have to weigh it by 5-to-1.
Okay, great. Got 4 more stories.
Right. I was at a parking lot of a grocery store and got out of my car and heard some awful, awful screaming. So a mom was really upset and really screaming at her kids, and it was disturbing. And I thought, oh my gosh, what do I do? Well, another parent jumped in and started screaming at that parent.
Mm.
So just escalated the whole situation, added to it, and I thought, oh boy. What I really wanted in the end was for the parent who was screaming to be able to regulate herself and get back to a place where she was safe to be with those little kids again.
Yeah.
And I thought, what could I do that would help her get that way? Because I also had angry feelings. I don't like it when people mistreat kids. So I had to really bracket those feelings.
Yeah.
And you know what I did?
No.
I went over and asked her if I could give her a hug.
Oh.
Yeah, and I think she was shocked because as I came toward her, I could tell she was a little nervous. I think she thought I was another person that was going to yell at her. And I just really gave her my most compassionate expression. And I just said, it seems like you're having a really tough time. I'm wondering if I could hug you. And then she told me all about a friend of hers that had been in a car accident. I mean, she was having a really bad day.
Right.
And we chatted a little bit. And I think that she was able to get back to a place where she was then safe with her kids.
Mm. How did you think of doing that? Just going up and hugging a stranger?
It was not a natural. I had to really think it through on a cognitive level. I really did. Because as I said, I was a little mad at her too. But I just really believe that people need that kind of support in order to be able to be the kind of person we want them to be with kids.
Very nice. It reminds me of what you said. What's the most compassionate and kind thing I can do in this situation? And that's a pretty good question to ask yourself as a parenting educator and as a parent, because there often is so much going on in the lives of parents and so much going on emotionally with children that a lot of times to take a step back and think, what can I do that's compassionate, is a great question to ask yourself. And you were talking about really how in some ways parenting educators are role models, right? We're acting with the kindness and the listening that we would want the parents to do with their children.
Definitely.
Another part of that is collaboration. And I think as we as parenting educators collaborate with parents, maybe they can also learn to collaborate with their kids on solving problems instead of thinking that they have to solve the problems all on their own. Because I know sometimes when parents come in and they've worked too hard at solving, let's say, I want my kid to do homework, right? I want my kid to clean her room. I want my kid to
Get off their phone.
Yeah. Get off the screen. Get off the phone. And a lot of times this thing called problem polarization happens where the kid becomes completely not interested in doing homework or cleaning the room because the parent is so invested in it. Mm-hmm. And if you can engage kids to be more collaborative, like, well, what do you think might work? How can we handle this situation mm-hmm. so that I'm not getting mad all the time? And you can have a collaborative interaction with kids. Kids sometimes have some really great ideas for solving problems.
Well, and I think anytime a kid or anybody is a part of the solution, they've helped come up with the solution yeah. and create the solution, they're going to be way more invested and way more likely to carry it through. So it's always a good idea.
More wise words from Sarah.
Yeah, I know. Thank you.
Just trying to get up to four,
yeah,
five.
Yeah, we're getting close.
Yeah.
So, John, I think it might be time for money tips.
Yes. Ching, ching.
Mm-hmm.
So what's yours?
My biggest money tip is just to remember the power of connection. So if parent educators can really connect with parents, mm-hmm. that is going to help parents connect with their kids. And connection is at the root of all of us having healthier, stronger relationships, which leads to more success and happiness in life.
I'm going to steal yours and say 5-1 positive. But really, it's, you know, like you said, don't use a calculator, don't track it, but really keep in your mind, how do you notice things that parents are doing right as a parenting educator?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you notice things as a parent that your kids are doing right?
Mm-hmm.
And the more positive our frame, I think the better off we are in terms of helping parents and helping parents help their kids.
I love that. I think that should be a golden rule. Notice the strengths and goodness in other people. Yeah, that's a great thing. Okay, so my resource would be this great book.
Yeah.
How to Listen. So parents will talk, and talk so parents will listen. And it's by Dr. John Summers Flanagan and Dr. Rita Summers Flanagan.
I feel a little embarrassed for you to say that, but I do think it's a great resource. Most people who have read it have been pretty positive about it. And again, it's not a New York Times bestseller. It's, let's just say, it's fun to read, but it's probably not going to keep you up all night because you just can't put it down.
But truly, for all parent educators, anyone who works with parents, I really do think it's invaluable. I have it almost memorized. So
thanks. And so my resource, Sarah, is the tip sheets that mm-hmm. are on my blog. And just go to johnsummersflanagan.com, mm-hmm. click on tip sheets, and there's about 10 on there. You can use them with parents. You can use them yourself if you are a parent. I think it's got some good information. It's certainly not, they're not the only tip sheets on the block, so mm-hmm. people can find other tip sheets online. I recommend that they check those out as well.
Yeah, and most communities really these days have a supportive parenting network. I think it would be great if everyone got involved in that sort of thing.
Yeah.
However, it's time for us to sign off.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And in closing, I would just say one of the reasons we're here is because we think it's important for parents to keep trying to be just a little bit better,
mm-hmm.
Not necessarily perfect,
mm-hmm.
not even practically perfect.
Not even practically
but
perfect.
We should try to improve ourselves, just become a little better every day, every week in the way that we parent our children and the way that we work as parenting educators with parents.
To support parents, yes.
Yes.
Thank you. The Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast is sponsored in part by the Charles Englehart Foundation, audio engineer Mike Matthews, production assistant Joey Moore, and co-hosts Sarah Polinchek and John Summers Flanagan.